All right, welcome to the second edition of Candid Coaches Conversations. And the first one aired this past week, and we talked about transfers. And the goal of this is obviously to have great conversations with some of the top assistant coaches around the country, and also some media people that maybe aren't so good at their jobs, like Rob Doster and Jeff Borzella and myself on here today. One of the reasons that CY and I kind of came up with this was to have these conversations with primarily assistant coaches, different topics, honestly, part of it was getting a chance for you guys to know media better, media chance to get to know you guys better. And the topic this week, again, Black coaches in the industry, how it's been for so long and how it's starting to hopefully change in the right direction. And one of the people that hopefully will help change it is Des Oliver, the new head coach at East Tennessee State. I've known Des, I think we might have met the first time, like Buckingham Brown and Nichols watching the late Kendrick Price. I don't remember, but I think that's when it was, years and years ago. But 9 different assistant coaching stints at different schools, 51 years old now, and you get your opportunity to be a head coach at East Tennessee State. And it doesn't come without, I don't know if criticism is the right word, but certainly there are a lot of people that thought you were crazy to take this job. I called you about 3 weeks ago before you took it and asked you, did you have any hesitation? Because obviously this was something where East Tennessee State had parted ways with Jason Shea after a year, and after he supported his players kneeling in protest of the national anthem. A bunch of Republican senators came out, signed a bill or a letter prohibiting basically from them doing that in the future. So I guess, Des, start off with why you chose to take this job when a lot of people probably did wonder, especially whether a Black head coach could work at East Tennessee State with what just happened.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I didn't like even think about all of that when it was happening. And when I've never thought about not taking a job or taking a job based on what other people think, I've never thought that way. My role was basically we're playing, we're in season. And I had a really crazy month or so of Zooms and interviews, starting with Albany, came in second there. At the same time Albany was happening, Jacksonville happened. And listen, in every case, I didn't make one phone call to call one AD about their head coaching position. And so, phone call comes from Albany, I'm involved with that job, I don't get it. Jacksonville, I don't get it. And yet we're in the bubble in Indy, and I'm working on scouting reports for Vandy and the teams that I scouted during the year. And luckily didn't have any of those games to play, but I'm doing Zooms in a bubble. And then Winthrop opens, and I get the phone call about Winthrop. So I'm preparing for that. And then Austin Peay opens. I get a phone call about that. And so I'm involved with those two. And I really was thinking Winthrop because I spent 5 years in the Charlotte area, and I have so many friends in that area. My oldest son grew there for 5 years. We're connected. I love the area. I was so caught up in Winthrop. I remember the Wednesday of my interview, kind of walking you guys through my mindset. And I fly down to Charlotte, interview for Winthrop. The interview went really well, I thought, in person. And my boys, so in Charlotte, I had a pickup game every Sunday for 5 years that AAU coaches, high school coaches, doctors, lawyers, politicians, we were the most connected game in town. If you got a speeding ticket, I had somebody in that game that could fix it for you. So one of my guys had bought a new house, and he built a court in his backyard. He's a guy that kind of discovered dribble up, the new app for dribble up. So anyway, they're playing pickup, and they said, Des, you are going to get the job at Winthrop. Come on down, play pickup with this man, hang out. Great day. So I interview, plan pickup, game ends. I'm driving to my buddy's house to spend a night, and then drive back in the morning to Knoxville. And my phone rings, and it's, folks from ETSU. And I was so zoomed out. I was so tired of the interview process. And listen, in my heart, I knew I was going to get this job. I felt good about it. I'm like, there's no way I'm not getting this. I'm a perfect fit. And I almost didn't take the call. Like, I didn't answer it. I was tired. And I'm driving down the road. And then my instincts kicked in and said, Dez, man, you spent 25 years in a project, man, that I can Donovan Drive. Who are you to think that, you know, you can't return this phone call and at least talk about this job? And it wasn't anything to do about ETSU. It was just the fatigue of the process and me thinking I had a job that would have been offered to me within 24 hours at Winthrop. So I called back and I talked with the administrator, and he says, Dez, can you Zoom in the morning? I said, there's no way I'm getting up that early to get back in time to Zoom in the morning. He said, well, you know what? How about tomorrow afternoon? So I said, sure. So I get up, drive home. And again, my mindset, I'm thinking I am going to get an offer from this other program. And so I'm waiting. And so I get a text from the AD from Winthrop saying, let's talk in a couple hours. So I'm thinking it's all good. And so anyway, the phone call never happens. And then my Zoom comes with ETSU and they blew me away. I mean, like the call was more about, the Zoom was more about talking about the program and the upside of the program is history than what it was an interview. I didn't feel like I was interviewing for the job. And I know these guys. I'm an hour and a half down the road at UT. Their donors donate to UT. It's some of the same people that donate to both. The president has a degree from UT. So the schools are connected. And so anyway, so now the Zoom ends and they say, well, can you talk with the president tonight at 6? So I'm thinking this is serious because you don't normally get the same, you know, two Zooms back to back in one day with the president unless these guys are prepared to move forward. And so I'm thinking, well, yeah, but I'll probably get a phone call before that anyway and be a head coach someplace else. Phone call didn't happen. And the president and I Zoom at 6. And I felt like a recruit for the first time in a sense of my mind was locked in at one place. When that Zoom ended at 6:45, talking to Dr. Nolan, the president here at ETSU, I walked out of the room in my house and my wife said, you don't look right. And I said, for 3 years, I've sat and looked at Winthrop as the job that fit us and fit me because of location and history. I said, right now I'm messed up because ETSU is a hell of a job. I know these people, and if they offer the job to me, I'm taking it, period. I'm taking the job. And so that's kind of how things happen. So, you know, I talk with Winthrop, don't get the job offer there. The next afternoon, I get a phone call, offer the job at ETSU when I take it. And so never at any point in time did I even think for a second about that. Like, one, when I arrived in Knoxville, there was stuff going on in Knoxville. Like, you know, the different head coaches had left from Pearl to Donnie Tindall, who, you know, had a rough go of it because of some of the same issues and concerns. Quanzo was here before Donnie, same kind of concerns. And then Donnie came. So our program here was a little fragile at Tennessee initially. And getting off to a good start, getting the community to accept us wasn't easy, especially in recruiting. I remember getting an email that was a little bit racist from one of our donors at Tennessee after we had signed Grant Williams, Jordan Bone, Jordan Bolton, Cray Parker, and Jalen Johnson. And three of those guys are pros and all guys that I recruited. And so the email kind of read, it was kind of like, you're not very smart. You're signing three-star guys. And we're used to getting five-star guys back when Pearl was here. And all I did was I meditated for about 30 seconds. I prayed over it to have enough maturity to send the right words back. And I did. And my email read, well, listen, I appreciate your loyalty to the program and, you know, and your concern. But I said, just give us 4 years. Give us 4 years to prove you wrong. Give us 4 years to tap into these kids who I think are better than three-star recruits anyway, to see if we're right. If we're wrong, they'll probably fire us anyway. But if we're right, then we'll make you proud of us, right? So 4 years, 3 years later, I'm sitting in Gatlinburg. My son's playing AAU. I'm sitting there watching the game. My son's playing the best game he's played in a long time, Dante. And I'm sitting there and I feel people pointing at me. I just kind of felt people looking my direction. And there's a group of 20, it's a true story, 25 people or so are pointing at me on the court. And they don't look like me.
These aren't like some dudes from the East Side who I play ball with. These are, you know, Tennesseans who support our program. And they walk down the stairs, around the court, and this lady, sweet as can be, older lady, white lady, walks up to me. She says, "Are you Dez Oliver, Coach Oliver?" And my heart's beating. I'm nervous as hell. And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Are you involved with the Kennesaw State search right now as head coach?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And she said, "Please don't leave us." She said, "Rob Lanier became the head coach at Georgia State a few days ago. We need you to stay one more year. And here's why. We love what you've done to our community with the young boys you've recruited. Those young boys are special. They're in the schools, elementary schools and middle schools. My great-great-grandson loves Admiral Schofield and Grant Williams." And so the whole talk was about them being proud, not so much of us winning, but the type of people that we're bringing to the community that were changing the vision and thoughts that they had about Black kids, to be quite frank with you. So to answer your question, when people ask about ETSU and the climate, I've been there at Tennessee. Rick Barnes hired two Black assistant coaches, not by accident, because you know what? He wanted two guys that could relate to Black kids and recruit and teach the guys on campus. Ain't nothing wrong with that. Most of you guys who are sitting there right now of color have a job because your head coach wants an African-American assistant coach who can relate and recruit. And so the thought of like me not taking a job because they needed a Black coach or wanted a Black head coach is crazy. I'm thinking to myself, they need me because I'm qualified for the position. I'm right up the road. I understand Tennessee better than anybody in the country. And I'm ready for the job. At 51, I'm ready for it. At 35, no way I would have been ready for the job. And so it was easy. And I'll say this, Rob Lanier, who is my brother, my mentor, I love him to death. Best man at my wedding. I was best man at his wedding. He was concerned. And so were you, Jeff. I mean, we talked about it. And that's the love that we have, is that you could call me and voice your concern. And we had a really good conversation. And I explained the same way I'm talking to these guys now to you. And you were like, "I get it." And listen, I've been here now for three weeks. I am so happy that I was smart enough to take that phone call back and talk to you. It's a great opportunity. These people here love our players. None of what's been talked about has affected any lifestyle that we've had, from going out in the community to going to the churches, to dinners at the mall. None of that has been a factor. I know what happened last year happened. I taught my kids, our guys at Tennessee, out of kneeling. And we talked about, you know, having a voice, which is way more powerful than taking a knee that you can't communicate with. And so we talked about, I said, "How about this, guys? For 2 weeks, have hard, tough discussions on your Zooms, in your dorms, with people who don't look like you about what's going on in the community, with the police." I told my 16-year-old son, who wanted to follow LeBron James' lead and wear a Black Lives Matter t-shirt to school and take a knee, I said, "Don't do that." I said, "Talk to people and have real tough discussions with them about what if we're in a car together and a cop pulls me over in Alcoa, like a suburb of our area. You know, I'm going to feel different with that same police officer than you might feel, and ask them why." And the same thing in my neighborhood, I made every neighbor that claims to be a friend hear me out. And we had people crying, apologizing for, you know, not knowing that they said racist things. Listen, we've all said things that are hurtful to people in life, racist or not. We've all done it in accident. When human beings get upset with each other, we say hurtful things innately, and then we apologize, whether it be race related, you're fat, you're skinny, you're ugly, or your big nose, small. We all do that stuff. And so we had some really, really impactful discussions. So if I can do that there in Knoxville, I'm gonna turn this down, a chance to be a head coach at a mid-major plus, high major minus institution that supports their basketball at a high level that's winning? No way. Not gonna happen.
Questions? Any questions for Dez from anybody here? I assume you guys got a couple. If not, I got one, but jump in.
Dez, I don't have much of a question, but like just speaking on what you talked about, like educate everyone. People that grew up, everybody grew up different. So you got to educate and get and talk to people. Like, I totally agree with you. Like, don't turn anything down if you think it's a great place. Just talk to people. Like, they just see skin color, but they don't know you. You might grew up the same. You just had different skin color. And then a lot of people, they always respect you more when you talk first. And then they get to know you. And I just think that's a great thing. You're educating. And we're in the education business, even though we're basketball coaches. We're educating them every day on just how to grow up, how to become a man. And then, and now you got to be aware of things that's going on, the climate in the world today.
Dez, let me say this to you. First, I want to say, man, I'm really proud of you because I'm going to be honest with you. I was with your right-hand man, Lanier. Actually had some conversations on the phone about it and was very concerned and probably more angry at East Tennessee State because what I've learned about our profession is he who controls the narrative is king. So I know some of the things about Jason Shea. They tried to make it seem like, hey, they wanted to fire him anyway, or he wasn't a very good coach. And I'm a firm believer that he's a solid coach and that he's a stand-up guy. And I respect what he did for standing up for those kids down there. But listening to you talk, you taking the job, the beautiful thing about basketball is black, white, orange, green. For that time, it brings everybody together. And I tell Jalen Hamilton all the time, you know, what Jackie Robinson did for baseball, that's what he's doing for basketball and has done. And what I'll say to you is I played at Georgia Southern. East Tennessee State is a big-time program. In late 80s, early 90s, we used to get 10,000 a game down there. Mr. Jennings, Greg Dennis, I guess a big-time program. But that area – does need change. If you drive through their recruiting, you're nervous about being pulled over in that area. So I commend you for taking the challenge to go there, to be a prominent figure in that community and to help make change in terms of race relations, because that area does need it. So respect to you, man. I'm really proud of you.
Listen, your area needs it too. Everyone, listen, I'm from Buffalo, New York. And I've had a lot of fights growing up as a young person when I was a teenager because somebody said something sideways to me. Back when I was that dude and I was putting my hands on people for saying something wrong to me. I'm way more mature than that now. I mean, come on, man. Like, are we in the South? Like, there's an area in every area. This area is in the Carolinas. I lived in Georgia, North Carolina. I recruited in South Carolina. I done been in Florida. I've been all over the country. So there's an area in every state that you don't want to get pulled over in. It ain't just Tennessee. And my thing is, like, that's the narrative I think that we just got to get better with in general. Like, for example, we all are sitting in chairs right now, either as an assistant coach or myself now as a head coach. There is somebody who sat in the Oklahoma chair, Cincinnati chair, Florida State chair, wherever you guys at, Iowa State chair, of color, that had a bad experience as an assistant coach years ago. Do the research. You'll find them. You sitting in that chair now, you guys aren't saying, I'm not going to take the job at Purdue because in 1968, they didn't treat John Smith the right way. Take the job because it's a good-ass job, pardon my French. It's a good job. And we have the ability to create change and impact people. Like, I can't create no change, any change, if I don't have some sort of power in front of me. And right now, I'm sitting in this chair, and I have a tremendous president, tremendous AD and staff, and we talk every day. And matter of fact, my president and I played pickup ball together last night. He still plays. I mean, guy's in great shape. But we're having these discussions. The first two things I asked for when I took the job here, I said, well, to our donors, I said, I don't need your money yet. I said, what I need right now from you guys is I need your time and your connections. Because I wanted to be in this chair for so long, not because I want to make a ton of money, man, and be a millionaire and get to the next job. I want to impact lives like I thought I was going to impact lives when I got into this. I turned on Get My PhD in 94 to do this, right? And sitting in that other chair as an assistant coach, I couldn't do that. I brought in players. I mentored and coached my butt off. I scouted my butt off. I couldn't really impact lives. What I mean by that is, I asked one of my top donors, I said, I need you to help me establish a mentoring program. I said, a mentoring program with CEOs of companies, with wealthy people who control, you know, hiring to become mentors to my guys based on their majors, real estate, business, whatever that is. I need a mentor for that guy. So when those guys are here, we're connecting the dots. And then when they get done playing overseas in the G League, whatever they're playing for at 28, 30 years old, they're on that guy's on speed dial and they get, you know, get jobs. We need that kind of action to happen. And we're doing that right now. Like we are working on that because for 27 years, I've loaned a lot of money, man, to guys who have graduated, played overseas, and they call me, not my $1 million head coach. They call me and say, "Coach, man, I'm struggling right now. I've been playing for a little bit. Can I go borrow $500? And I've always said, I'll never say no the first time if I can afford it, because those guys put me in that next chair. The guys at Cornell put me in the chair at St. Bonaventure. The Bonner guys put me at Georgia. The Georgia guys put me at Tennessee. So I'll never say no to those guys. But my thing is, I wish I could have done more as an assistant coach to help them with their lives. Many of them have no experience, no resumes, no confidence skill-wise. I got a 16-year-old son that has two businesses because of my leadership. His own workout company, his own video company. I don't give him any money to spend. He got his own money to spend. And so my thing is, why can't I do something like that for the guys I'm coaching? Now, we all know to keep my job, I got to win some games. I get that. But if my tenure is 4 years or 14 years, I want to do that, because I don't think that dudes are thinking about our kids that way. They care about basketball. And so, again, at ETSU, what better place to get that going than to have some intelligent young people, you know, that are getting it done off the court? And then lastly, I don't think that many of our young people can speak to, you know, to the media and market themselves correctly. Like the branding isn't great. At Tennessee, we had a tremendous SID who did a tremendous job of helping our guys through social media brand themselves. So here in June, my guys get back June 23rd. We're going to work with the local media on basically teaching my team, one through whatever number of guys I end up having, 13, 14 guys, how to talk to the media, how to express yourself, be intelligent, how to talk about tough topics without being offensive, but be intelligent. And I hope that branding will help those guys in a job interview. So, I just sat back and said to myself, if there was anybody that was questioning me taking this job, they don't know who I am, because that's who I am. I've been that way since I was a kid. And every job I've had has had some scuttlebutt to it where there was a challenge involved. Listen, all of our jobs, you're at Iowa State right now for a reason. You're at, you know, Florida State, Cincinnati for a reason, because things have happened there. And we got to clean some stuff up. And we're good at that. We're good at cleaning things up. But as you clean things up, can you build and add to it in the process? And I hope that you have great administration with you that have your back. Listen, even good administrators make mistakes. Listen, I wasn't here last year. I don't know what happened, who's at fault. I do know this. I've been fired before other jobs. So good administrators make mistakes. At Georgia, we had a hell of a staff. There's no way after winning a championship in 2008, our staff shouldn't have made it for more years. In my opinion, they made a mistake. So administrators make mistakes in this thing, right? So I can't hold, you know, I make mistakes. I've signed kids before that have not made it. and I, you know, like you guys, I've sat there in that home visit and sold to Big Mama that he you know, so-and-so is going to make it. And now as an assistant coach, the head coach and him didn't fit. He didn't make it. Like those things happen in our profession, man. They do.
All right. So you were one of 28 black head coaches this past cycle, 28 of 54, over 50%, which is remarkable in a sense, because again, the numbers previously, 23% overall black head coaches in the industry, right? 13 of 77 high major, that's 17%. Before this past year. So obviously there's something going in the right direction here. It should have happened long before a year ago, but I guess it took that. How worried are you guys, and anybody can jump in, that this is just going to be a blip, that this is a 1 year deal and it could revert back in a year or two?
I can start. I'm not worried. I think it's great. It's a start in the right direction. Now, do we have to be successful? Yes. that's the part I worry about. If we're not successful, how fast are we going to be able to get a job again, a head job, opportunity again at that? That's probably more concerning to me, is like that part, like if it don't work out. But I think we got to start somewhere. And there's a lot of great assistant coaches out there. And I'm so happy that it's starting now. And I'm proud of the guys that got hit, getting their opportunity. And I wish them nothing but the best. And a lot of them know me and I know them. And like anything I can do to help them, I'll try my best to help them.
So I kind of see it a little bit differently for us in terms of why we haven't had more chances. And I'm a victim of it. Is I think we get lost in our jobs a lot, you know, as Black assistant coaches. I was told day one when I first got hired in 94 that if you can't recruit, you can't keep a job. And so, again, I'm raised in a project. I spent 25 years in the projects. I mean, my neighborhood is as challenging as any I've ever. I've been to Compton. I've been to Baltimore. I'm not seeing one that's more challenging than Donovan Drive was. I'm not saying it's the worst, but it's in the conversation. And so my mother struggled as a single parent to raise me. And so you're going to tell me now that, you know, like with all the stuff going on right now that, you know, like I'm not going to be excited about, you know, kind of where our deal is. No, but knowing that in my time as an assistant coach, I didn't do enough to put myself in this position. Like, I didn't network. I just did my job. I just recruited guys and brought them by the house for dinner. And mentor guys on campus and put my arm around them and work them out in the mornings and did my scouting reports. And I felt like just doing a good job was doing a good job. And the last 5, 6, 7 years, because of people out there who are doing these symposiums and helping us become more educated, I've learned how to build my brand. And so I think it's up to us. It's up to me as a head coach now. And I know CY does a great job of this, is mentoring some of you younger guys who are going to get your shot. At how to do both, because sometimes you guys are so busy being the point man on your staffs. Like, I'm not sure about you guys, and I hope I'm not offending any of my coworkers I worked with in the past, but I've always felt like every job I ever had, with the exception of one or two, that I had to pull the weight recruiting wise, that if I didn't bring in the guys, we were probably going to fail with not having enough talent. And so I didn't have enough time to be out there trying to chase a job. I was just trying to keep afloat. And normally I had bad, tough jobs that weren't winning. And I was blessed to get, I always said when I was 30 years old, let me get a guy like a Hall of Fame coach to work for, like a Rick Barnes, and let me bring my talent to that guy's resume. And I was blessed a few years ago to get that. But there's a process you guys got to go through, man. And you guys are probably doing it, where you just have to be able to market yourself. literally, I started going out every recruiting trip and spending time with at least one AD per recruiting trip in the area, calling folks for lunch and like just sit down. And it's amazing. All those phone calls I was getting were because people knew me through somebody or knew me personally. And so I think I hear your point about us having to do well, but I think that coaches who aren't of color have been doing that for decades. And that's why a lot of guys are getting more chances, because they know the ADs and the presidents, and we don't. And so it's up to us. Listen, we're great recruiters. So recruit. I always tell you know, admins that, you know, to me, recruiting is not just about players. It's about recruiting people, donors, getting jobs, the community. It's all the same. So take your skill that you use to recruit 18, 19-year-old talented players and recruit people that can elevate your careers when it's all said and done.
I'd like to follow up on that a little bit, especially on the recruiting piece. You know, I've had several different jobs, and I can count on my hand how many times a coach starts off the interview process and asks me about my coaching ability. The first thing you want to know, can you get me players? And I'm proud of that. I'm proud of the fact that I'm a good recruiter, but I've also been around this game all my life. My dad's a high school coach for 30-something years. My brother's a Division I coach, also a head coach. And sometimes they get lost in the shuffle of trying to develop yourself as a whole. And when every time you get this opportunity to get a job, when I tell the young coaches coming up, sometimes it's not about the university or the school. It's about who you're aligning yourself up with. that's so important. It's so important as a young coach coming up, you got to align yourself with the right people. So now you have the opportunity to develop your whole as a whole, not just your recruiting ability, but your scouting, your on the floor coaching. That's something that as young guys come in this business, have to understand that you have to align yourself with people that are going to allow you to grow as a coach. And I had one coach and don't want to say his name, but after I got a job, he said, "Hey, coach, you don't even have to come to practice. Just give me some players." And so I, you know, I'm there now. Hey, one guy, and I signed a contract, and you know, I said, "Coach, I'm sorry, but I'm coming to practice. I'm gonna get you some players too, but I'm coming to practice." You know, then I had one coach that sometimes he let you do scouts, sometimes he didn't let you do scouts. You know what I did? I went in the bathroom, looked in the mirror, and I did the scout anyway, so I can develop as a coach. So as young coaches come into business, so you can make that next step. So when you do get that opportunity, you'll be ready to go. That's something I think is very important.
I want to, Dez, you made a great, great point because, you know, nobody wants to say this. What we found out from the Colin Kaepernick deal is racism is the American way, to be honest. So we do need help. Everywhere in terms of making change. But I'm really glad that Jeff is on the call. I'm really glad that TJ and Grant are on the call because I think those guys are some of the best coaches in the country. I'm a huge TJ Sorrentine, don't know me from the man in the moon, but I'm a huge TJ Sorrentine fan. I watched him at Vermont lead them, dominate the America East. I love mid-major guys that take their teams to the show. I always knew from watching you play that you were going to be a heck of a coach. But I want to say this to everybody, especially the media members, and this is very important. He who controls the narrative is king. What Chad Dollar is talking about and what Dez is talking about, and Jeff and I have had this conversation. I've been in this profession 26 years, and I'm from the deep South, right? Born in Miami, played at Georgia Southern, coached at Auburn, Georgia Tech, and now Florida State. Nobody on this call is ate more Waffle House than me, right? Scatter covered in chunk. I'm in there, right? So in the South, the Black assistant coach has almost been assassinated like JFK. What do I mean by that? TJ, Grant, your guys on the staff, the narrative that comes off each staff's, what Dollar Bill was talking about, it's not that some of the young Black coaches can't coach. It's not that they don't have the ability to coach. It's that the people they're working with is so intimidated by the relationships they have with AAU coaches, high school coaches, parents, and the players that they say, they're really good in this area. We can't let them be good in this area too. So they put out a narrative to Jeff and to other Caucasian coaches that this guy can't coach. Well, just because they say this guy can't coach, that don't mean he really can't coach. So that spreads around and now that becomes your reputation. So what Chad Dollar is talking about in terms of lining yourself up with the right people is very important. There are staffs in the ACC and the SEC, and I'm not going to call them out, that I know for a fact that they go have meetings and the other Black coaches on the staff don't even know what's going on. They show up in practice like, hey, what's going on? They tell them, don't worry about it, right? It's just a takeover. Like, you don't have a chance. So to the media members and to other guys, what I want to say to you guys is when you see young Black coaches coming up, don't just assume that they can't coach, that they don't have the ability, because that's what's coming out of that camp. Really get to know each individual, because when I was a young assistant, I had to fight that. I had to almost escape in the middle of the night out of one program like Harriet, like, I'm gonna skip it, but in the middle of the night, escape to get to another program so that I could show people that I was the total package. So, I'm glad we're talking about the issue. I'm glad that guys are being candid. I would really like to know what Grant or TJ have to say about this as we continue on.
Yeah, you know, the one thing I'll add to this is, you know, I work for a head coach where you have to be ingrained in every aspect of the program. So he doesn't want just a guy that's going to say, all right, I'm a recruit, I'm going to be on the road 5 or 7 days a week. Like, you have to be able to get on the court, and you have to be able to put together a scouting report. And scouting for Coach Willard, you got to know every single play they run, every zone play, every underneath, out-of-bounds play. So the guys that I work with, and I work with two of the best African-American assistants, I think, in the country, they're polished in every area. And my advice I would be to give up-and-coming guys, you know, that want to be get in this profession and want to do it at the highest level, make sure you work for a guy that's going to allow you to become a head coach. And that's something that our head coach wants. Like, if he's out of town, he might tell a different person to run individual workouts. And they got to have a voice. They got to be able to coach. They got to be able to do different drills and practice. And for the up-and-coming guys, don't just work for a guy who's going to send you on the road, because that's going to benefit him. But if you're not going to benefit yourself, and you're not going to get the chance to do scouting reports, in-depth scouting reports, you're not going to get a chance to do individual workouts, you're benefiting him more than he's benefiting you. And it should be a 50-50 thing, where you're helping him in certain areas, but he's also helping you, so that one day you're going to be able to run your own program.
Dez, man, congrats, first of all. Even though you didn't recruit me when you were at URI, you know, I'll show you some love, man. So it's funny. So my best friend in this world is black, right? We grew up together. And so we've had, you know, we always talk about this stuff. And he's a huge advocate. And, you know, he came from the projects, and he now he has his PhD, right? But he's also a rapper, right? So he teaches classes at community college, you know, up the road. Like, he is the smartest, most intelligent dude that I've ever come across. No offense to anybody else, but this dude he's elite, man. And he's a rapper on the side. So what he does is to supplement, you know, and it's something he's passionate about. He has reached out for the last 5 years to all these, you know, college, Brown University, where I'm at, you know, a lot of PWIs, predominantly white institutions. And up until this point, man, they don't call him back. They don't email him back. You know, he gets in the community. So he's in the high schools, he's in the middle schools, and he's doing his thing on a lower level. But he feels so strongly about what he does and his message that he's trying to get in colleges all over the country. Now, the George Floyd thing happens, right? And we're talking daily about it. And he's like, you know, my biggest concern is everyone's being reactive. He's like, that, you know, it's a react. We're in a reactive state right now. He's like, T, you won't believe it, man. My phone is blowing up. Everybody wants me to come speak now and share my message. And, you know, he's like, that's my biggest concern, that everything is so reactive right now. We need to be proactive. And he was like mad, like, man, I don't know if I'm going to do it now. It's just so react, doesn't feel right. I said, and I told him, I said, man, go get that money. I said, take that money. I said, part of you going and getting that money, now these people want to pay you to come speak, and you sharing your message, that's what, like that's the most important thing. Share your message, man. And that's part of being proactive. And I think that's a huge deal. You know, one thing we've done here is we started a Black Excellence Speaker Series. And like, we want our young black players to be, you know, role models and go speak in the community. We do a ton of that stuff, but they need role models too. So it's our job to provide them role models. Like, you know, in our athletic department here at Brown, there's one, maybe two African-Americans in the athletic department. So like, they might say, man, I can't be an AD. You know, I can't be working in the athletic department because they don't see people like them. But then we have Bernard Mir, who's a former basketball player at Brown, AD at Stanford, come on, speak to them and share his message. Like, oh, man, maybe I can be an AD. You know, so from my perspective, the education is so important to educate these guys and give them, you know, examples of great black success stories. It's something I feel passionately about. I'm thrilled to death. You know, Jeff, you reached out. CY, I appreciate you having me on. You know, I love having these conversations. So just a quick thought, and hopefully.
So I'll say this to you guys. And so I think this is a big part of it too, for coaches of color, is again, you know, the message that you send out to people is so important. The message, your brand. For example, my mom, since I was a really young kid, was really big on me being able to communicate the right way, like how I talked. All of my friends, with the exception of Rob Lanier in the neighborhood, were great guys. They were neighborhood dudes. And my mom, she had a vision, and she just felt like, you can't make it out of here without being able to speak the King's language at a high level. And so she, you know, she made me take speech classes, and I took them in college. And it's funny because I remember my freshman year, you know, wearing do-rags around campus, man. I mean, I was straight up Donovan Drive, and I talked like it to a degree. And as I gotten older, I just realized that people judge me, like would judge me real quick. People that weren't of color, real quick, based on how I sounded. And so I decided at, like, you know, I guess early on in my career, that I wanted to sound like a head coach every time I talked to people, no matter what. However, it's funny because then I got to a point where, as an assistant coach, I didn't get certain jobs because I had white head coaches at the highest levels that were questioning, quote unquote, are you black enough, or I guess urban enough was the word, to go into the hood and recruit the dudes I grew up with. And I was offended. And you know, now I should have just went in and gave them Donovan Drive Dez on the spot, right? But I didn't. I was you know, real passive on it. And so that's the hats that we had to wear. And so it's funny because I'm real political. Like, I speak a certain way in public outside of my home. In my home, I am urban. I mean, my kids laugh. Like, I'm straight up down, because I have two black kids in the suburbs who I want to have a balance, because my kids sound like I do at work all the time. And so there's a balance between us being able to have people look at us in this chair as a head coach and be corporate enough, even though some of us come from some neighborhoods, man, that we're blessed to still be alive. Like, I tell my story to people that don't really understand it, and it takes a while to get through it. And folks are crying, like some of the things that Rob Lanier and I went through, and we still living. And never sold drugs, never robbed nobody, but we around all of that stuff every day. And we're here to talk about it, man, and mentor kids. And so how about this, kind of closing? My first day here on the job, before my press conference, I talked to our team. And I had, the whole team was in a portal, except for like one or two dudes. And my whole thing was, just give them your story, Dez. That way that they know that you understand who they are. And I gave my story. I started crying. They almost started crying. But I knew I had them in a sense of, they heard me. And they said, let's give this guy a chance. Because for the first time, here's a guy that's been through what we're going to go through. And I think that's the message, man. Like, we have to wear two hats in a sense, you guys, and be able to be political and corporate without compromising who you are as a person. Because my neighborhood made me tough enough to take this job right now and make it work. And it's the same with you guys. Iowa State and Oklahoma and Cincinnati and Purdue and Furman, like, your neighborhood, suburban, urban, whatever it is, made you tough enough to walk on that court, man, as one of a few people on campus that look like you in that role and do a great job. But wear those hats, man. Sound like a head coach. When you're talking to media, when you're like, don't get too comfortable, because sometimes that's going to get you, like CY's saying, and you're saying, Chad, that folks are saying behind the back, well, you know what? He ain't ready. Sometimes it's that lunchtime conversation where you're comfortable and you're giving them Donovan Drive that dudes don't understand. So I just don't give them Donovan Drive. I just don't do it. My kids get it. CY may get it at dinner. Chad may get it. But I'm not giving it to people in public.
Hey, Tim Johnson. Yes, I wasn't gonna let you speak because you got me fired as the head coach at Georgia Southern. But you go ahead and speak for us, even though you put about four double doubles on my head. Go ahead, Tim, please.
No, I was just sitting here trying to soak it all up. I mean, there's so much wisdom on this screen, you know, in a lot of ways. You know, I wanted to listen. You know, I wanted to listen. All you guys, if I don't know you personally, I respect you and what you've done in the business. And then for the people I do know, you know, just sitting here getting to take in Coach Oliver, I know we probably got a problem. We got to compete with him, and he's really, really sharp. I know what he's going to do there. So I would say I'm a little younger. My experiences have been a little bit different. But what I will say is two things. One, I believe in the innate goodness of people. And then two, I believe people generally want to win. And everything comes from that. It's all business related. But, you know, at 26 years old, me working for Coach Young, Mike Young, who's now at Virginia Tech, you know, I'm 26 years old. I'm fresh in the business, but I came in and did my deal. We go to the NCAA tournament. You know, he passes me the scout and he didn't even think twice about it. But I think it was because the work he had saw throughout the year. I think it was because of my level of preparation. And the year after that, we played, that was Arkansas. The year after that, we played Michigan. And Darius Nichols has a scout, right? So 2 years in a row, this is the biggest games of his career. And I don't think he was thinking, you know, this got to go to a white guy per se. He was, who's the best guy for this moment, right? And so, you know, in a lot of ways, people treat you the way you, to Coach Oliver's point, the way you are, right? And what you kind of, what you accept. And the second thing I'll say is my current experience working for Bob Ritchie, in a lot of ways, from day one stepping in the door, which is one of the reasons why I took the job, was just the constant reinforcement of, Tim, you are a head coach and you need to think like a head coach. You need to prepare like a head coach. And, you know, even a couple situations I've been in this year, you know, where I've gone for jobs, one in particular, and although I was the youngest guy in the group, the feedback I got was, you're the most prepared, right? So I'm not saying that these obstacles don't exist, and I'm not saying that, you know, I understand the context of racism historically and Black people, or people of color, I should say, rising to leadership positions. But I don't want to lose sight of, we really have to prepare. And I think the more you control your thoughts and the more you have a willingness to prepare and have the right habits, I don't think anybody can stop you from getting where you want to get. And that, maybe that's just a personal thing that I subscribe to. But, you know, I think you're going to get exactly where you want to go, whoever that is. I really don't think that anybody's personal opinion is necessarily going to hold you back. But again, I'm young, so maybe I'm a little naive in that, you know. And the last thing I'll say as far as this year, looking at the coaches hired, you know, the African-American coaches hired in our business, it's funny listening to Jeff say that stat. In my mind, I thought it was more 80% African-American, but doing the numbers, it was only about 52%.
Came back down. It started, it was closer to probably 70-75%, and then it kind of came back down towards 50.
Yep. So I guess the question begs, like, I don't want a year where it's 80% white. I don't want a year where it's 80% Black. I think we all want to get to the point where the best guy for the job gets the job. Yeah. However, I will say, I do think coming off the year we had, it was important to see a level of empathy from the leadership where, and what I mean by that is, you know, this thing will settle back down. But I think going into this year, there's just moments in history where it's important to see some empathy, you know, and given what happened in 2020, not just George Floyd, but just the entirety of the year, to see that level of almost acknowledgement of, we do care and we do want change and we do want these numbers to be different. I think that was important, you know, for this time. Now, moving forward, I think we do want to get to a point where the best guy for the, not even the best guy, the most prepared guy is getting the job. You know, I don't want a job because I'm Black, but I don't want to not get a job because I'm Black, right? And I think that's, you know, that's what we'll get to. But again, I've worked for incredible guys. Many of you guys know the guys I've worked for. It's like, hey, man, if you're prepared, you got the scout. You know, I've ran the defense. I've called plays on offense. I think my experience has been a little bit different. And maybe that's kind of shaped and molded the way I see this thing. But certainly, are there disadvantages? Have there been challenges to being African-American? Absolutely. And I won't discount that. But I really honestly believe we have to start making sure, especially for young Black assistants, are you prepared when you get your shot? And do you have a willingness to prepare for when your shot comes? Like, I'm listening to Dez. He's prepared. And everything he's talking about is his level of preparation based on his experiences. And that's what we got to keep preaching. You know, it's not, there's no boogeyman out here to get you. You know, you have to be willing to prepare and do your deal, right? But again, thanks for having me, and I appreciate you calling me out, CY.
I'm going to call out KT now. We want to give everybody kind of a shot here. I know it's hard with 12 people on, but KT, your thoughts on all this and kind of any which way you want to go?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, where should I start? Like what Chad said, like it's been situations where, I mean, you're talking to a head coach about a job and like you get a sense of all they want you to do is recruit. Now, I've been very fortunate every place I've been, I've done scouting reports. Like I've never been with a head coach to where they're like, ah, you don't have to be here or whatever. And Larry Brown really changed that. It was like, you're going to coach. It ain't no ifs, ands, and buts about it. You're going to coach on the floor. But I was involved in some assistant jobs and talking to a head coach, and all he kept talking about was recruiting, recruiting, recruiting. And I had to bring up, like, all right, coach, what other responsibilities will I have, you know? And I know exactly what Chad is talking about on that. And when I was younger, it was like, that's what it was about. Hey, I want to be known for getting guys, like, you know. And then once I start getting older, it's like, all right, dang, I want to be a head coach. Like, it's just not all about recruiting. And so I think that's a very huge key in what we're going through, especially when you're young. You know, what Terry said, I'm a firm believer in, like guys like Dez and guys who's gotten opportunities. We want to see you guys be successful. Like, Dez, I don't know you. I've never met you a day in my life, but I'm going to be rooting for you. And I know it's going to be a lot of other guys rooting for you. And Dez, what you said also is like, I think it's two sides to this. I mean, you have the basketball part. And what I realized that nobody ever told me coming up was I call it the business side of it. Like talking to ADs, going I've done symposiums with Top Connect. That's been huge for me. You learn a lot through that. But I got really inquisitive. Like, ask CY. I've called CY, just ask some questions because he's been a head coach before. And he looks like me. So I've called him numerous times. Hey, what do I need to be doing to try to get a job? And guys like him have really helped me out. And now I'm in a position to where I can help younger guys out, that tell them things that people weren't telling me coming up, because it's two sides to it. But I don't want to be known as a recruiter at all. I want to be a head coach one day, and you have to take those certain steps to do those things.
And fellas, I want to reiterate this to everybody on the call. It's really about what's the narrative that's coming out of your camp. And I want the coaches, the younger coaches on the call, to understand that it's important that the relationship you have with the coach that's working to the left and what's working to the right of you, and what are they saying? What is the narrative? Who's controlling the narrative? Because I love bringing out the elephant in the room, and, you know, I'm not
going to attest to this. Listen, I hear the narrative, so I can attest to this. I hear the narrative all the time, and sometimes I believe it. Usually you want to hear it from multiple people before you believe it, right? One person tells me something, a guy can't coach, a guy doesn't have scouts, he had them taken away from him. I'm not going to believe it on one person. I'm going to make sure I hear it from other people.
And that's important, Jeff. That's important. But I got a question for JR. Have you eaten at the Waffle House? If you hadn't eaten at the Waffle House, you're not speaking on this call.
I've eaten at the Waffle House. I was at a CY. When you first got, man, I've been following you guys, man. But when you first got to Florida State, I was down at St. Leo University, Division II down there.
Let's go. Okay.
I got some South in me. So
carry on.
It's been great. You know, the one thing that I really appreciate, and I'm like, you know, Tim, I'm trying to learn and take it all in. But, you know, Dez, you talked about building your brand. And as I've been blessed and been lucky to just start moving up, I went from D3 to D2 to ops to finally getting here. It's been a whirlwind experience. But now I'm starting to think differently. I'm starting to think, man, how can I get to the level of the rest of these guys that are on this call? And I respect you guys. And, you know, you talk about, you know, how you speak, and people have told me, hey, man, you got to dress a certain way and you got to do these things. And for me, man, 5 years ago, I'm 33 now. Like, I was like, man, I want to be able to relate to the players. Like, so I was coming in, man, I'm listening to the same music, I'm talking the same. And, you know, I've kind of rationalized that a different way where I was like, I can relate to these guys, but I also have to be able to be approachable for my next job. And I think I'm starting to mature in that way where now I'm starting to see myself as, okay, I know I need to speak this way. And Dez, I can relate to what you said. Like, I'm from the inner city of Milwaukee where a lot of my friends are either still there or they're not here anymore. So they're in the same place that they've been when I left, or they're not on this earth anymore. So I can see all this stuff, and I know it's a blessing for me to make it out. And now I'm like, okay, how can I get to the next level? And I'm appreciative where my feet are, but I'm also like, man, this opportunity, this offseason has been great, you know, to see everything and see how it's happening. But it's always about learning. And Tim, like you said, being prepared, man. So everything you guys have said, I really appreciate it. Chad, you know, like when you talked about, you know, how you can be put into that realm, like I've always, since I came up, I'm like, man, I'm not going to be that. I'm not going to be just a recruiter. I refuse. Like, I'm relentless and, hey, man, I'm going to get it done. Like, I'll work the dude out, have the scout, and then go get the player at night. And I'll drive and do it, like, because I refuse to be put in that box. And that's just something my mom had taught me growing up. It's just like, nope, you're not going to be that. You can do everything. And that's just how I've been kind of going after this deal. So, again, appreciate you guys and the time. And you know, I'm just here learning, and it's been great.
I wanted to say one last thing, if I could, fellas. I wanted to clear this up real quick. So our listeners, so my Tennesseans that listen to this call, don't take me the wrong way. When I said the South, my meaning is this. I spent 16 years in the South, 5 in Georgia, 5 in North Carolina, and now 6 in Tennessee. And I think the South has been different for us in the sense of my kids come home at every stop and they say, my friends at school are telling me that I'm the first kid of color that they've ever met in a neighborhood. I'm the first kid. So the South to me, when I say the South, is because a lot of areas just haven't been, you know, introduced to many people of color. And so it's very easy when you don't know about someone or have a feel to judge. We all do. It's human nature sometimes just to judge based on what you read in the media, you see the media. So that's what I mean by saying we're in the South. You know, it's different where your neighbor might not have seen a kid of color before. And then lastly, guys, this is the truth. When I didn't get Kennesaw State, it hurt in a sense of it was Atlanta. I loved the area. And my wife, for the first time, was really caught up in like the move. Like going to Atlanta, she cried over it. And she tough as nails. She don't cry over much at all, right? And so I said to myself, as opposed to me getting mad and blaming them, I said, clearly, I didn't do a good enough job of blowing them away to make sure that was my job. And so I wrote down all the interview questions. This is honest, the goodness truth. And I literally study them every single day. I'm driving to work. It's a 15-minute ride to and from my job in Knoxville, you know, both ways. I take 2 questions and take my iPhone and go to the memo deal and record myself like I'm driving, talking, answering the question. So when I got the question asked to me this year 6 times in 6 different interviews, I wasn't nervous. Like, I was so comfortable with answering. And I had my deal, like I had my program memorized. And so when you guys mentioned preparation, I believe it, man. You got to prepare for it. I mean, Tim said it. You just got to be prepared because those questions, man, are not easy, especially in front of a lot of people. You have a committee of 8-9 people in front of you. Those aren't easy questions to answer, man. So stay prepared for sure.
And the last thing I'll say, I know we got to wrap up, but I do want to say particularly to CY, like we have to give CY his flowers now before he's decided he's done. And what I mean by that is, you know, he's always been willing to pass down knowledge and information. And, you know, it was probably about 5 years ago, it was a diagram he drew up for me talking about attracting people, right? Which is one of his gifts. He's always been able to do it. I never met somebody that had a bad word to say about CY. And that he didn't have to do that for me. You know, I there's nothing CY can gain from me, but we talk about forwarding Black coaches and empowering Black coaches. That's what it's going to take, right? His, and same with Coach Oliver, they're both brave, they're both bold, right? And to be able to pass down that information and then go about themselves with a surety of self that they're doing, I think that's huge. But I know when he retires, we're going to throw a parade and it's going to be up, but for real, like, there's a podcast CY did with Coach Shulman. He probably don't even remember this. I studied that thing because, again, he's just passing out information. He talked about a guy skinny, I'm going to give him a cheeseburger, and we'll, you know, just his philosophy and recruiting and just all the information that he's willing to pass down. It's, us young guys are watching, you know what I'm saying? In a lot of ways, we don't get access to you guys because we're from different generations. But it does mean the world how you carry yourselves and the boldness and the braveness and the ability to again, pass down the information. So truly, brother, I appreciate you. And Coach Oliver, I'm rooting for you, man. I know we don't know each other well, but hopefully we will.
Hey, I know Borzello's got a quick question here before. I know we want to wrap, give it another few minutes, but I know Borzello's had a question, wanted to jump in at some point here.
Take it, Jeff. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, is there – I think about a guy like Mike Davis, you know, when he took over at Indiana, he did well early, fell off a little bit late, and he's never gotten back to that high major level. And even though he's been to, I think, 5 NCAA tournaments since then, he's never gotten a sniff at a Power 5 job. Is there any concern that, you know, some of these hires that were made this spring, if they struggle in 3 or 4 years and they're just never going to get a chance like this again? Is that a fear at all? I mean, anybody can answer this, and it doesn't just apply to Black coaches. I mean, Kevin Kruger at UNLV, the job could be too big for him, or Ben Johnson at Minnesota, whoever it is. Is there ever a concern that, hey, you know, they're getting this job now, but the narrative could be, and this goes to what CY was saying about narratives, the job, you know, the job is too big for him, it came too soon, and he never gets that shot again?
Dollar, take it.
I would agree with that. You know, I had a good friend of mine. He put Mike Davis, and you brought him up. He put Mike Davis' resume up, and then he put another guy's resume up, and then put the names on them. And I just knew that guy was a high major coach at that time. And Mike was at Texas Southern at that time. There's always a fear in that. There's a fear in of climbing up and not ever having that opportunity to go back up, whether you're an African American coach, head coach, or white coach. I think it goes back to your, like they said earlier, we talked about the branding of yourself, making sure once you drop down or something happens, you fall, that you reinvent yourself to get back up to that top ladder. I think that's a definite concern that we have to look at. And last thing, I want to go back to Dez, we talked about the South and things of that nature. I'm very familiar with Johnson City, Tennessee. I actually went to college in Milligan College, about 30 minutes from ETSU. And we talked about the opportunity, aligning yourself with the right people. I got my first opportunity to coach from a guy named Rick Scruggs. He was a head coach at Milligan College at that time. And when I graduated, he gave me a contract. He gave me a contract to start coaching. One of my best friends played at ETSU, Jerry Pelfrey. He helped me get into coaching and helped me learn a lot of stuff that I learned today. So aligning yourself up with the right people, whether white, Black, it doesn't matter. You just want to make sure that you do that. And so Johnson City was good to me. and it also, it's some really good people in that area also.
Hey, Goodman, this is for you because Jeff, you make a great point about Mike Davis. People don't talk about this. Mike Davis took Indiana to the championship game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, people, nobody, it's like he's a ghost. Like, it ain't never happened.
Yeah, well, it's hard. You go back down to Texas Southern, then you go, right? Like, nobody's hiring him. And I think part of it, honestly, is his reputation of being flammable, maybe hard to – and, again, I'm just saying what people are telling me within the industry. That's all. Like, I like Mike. I get along great with Mike. He should get another chance. But listen, it is harder. I feel like if there was a study done of Black coaches being fired and not getting other opportunities compared to white coaches that are recycled over and over and over?
Here you go, Jeff. And here's what I'm going to say to you. Again, you said, here's what they're telling me.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the narrative again. See what I mean? And who controls it? And young guys that's on this call, and Dez, I want to say this to you. You, when you don't get a job, it's not because you're not good enough most times, or you're not prepared, or you didn't do the interview great. Most of the time, when you don't get a job, it means the guy who got the job has a better relationship with the people that are hiring than you. So, Dan, don't beat yourself up about not getting the Winthrop job or the Kennesaw State job, because 95% of the time, it doesn't have to do with who's the most competent. It's who has the best relationship with the person that's doing the hiring. Who are the closest friends? Does that make sense to you, Dez, what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, so yes, it does. And I know that. So me coming into those were, the reality was I was playing, you know, from a deficit because I didn't know those guys. And when you are, and sometimes you will be, you better be prepared. Because, like, for example, I talked to ADs, you know, the guy that hired Shaka at VCU. And Shaka wasn't the first choice. But he went in there prepared and blew him away. And he became the first choice. I'm not saying it happens often, but it does happen. So I'm saying sometimes you get one shot. My thing is, you know, as a coach, if I sub my 10th guy in the game, he better be prepared to make that shot or you know, get that stop. Like, take advantage of those 2 minutes that might be the difference in him playing more the next game. Just be ready. And you're right. A lot of times it just comes down to connections. I'll say this to you as well. So that's been the difference. The last 3 or 4 years, I'm calling ADs like I talk to AU coaches. And I talk to ADs about why didn't so-and-so get the job, the interview for. And most of them tell me because he didn't interview very well. And these are people of color. So that's why I'm telling you guys, be prepared. Even if you know the AD, be prepared, because what if 3 of us get a chance to interview for a job and we're all, you know, good. We all know the AD. It'll come down to who has the best interview that can make the AD close his eyes and say, I can see that person being, you know, the CEO of my company.
And I want to say, and Dez, you're right. And everything you're saying is right. But I'm going to say this. And I've never been called old in a nicer way than what Tim Johnson just called me old. I appreciate that. But Tim Johnson is on this call, and I keep my ear to the ground, and I know for a fact that he did the best interview at Western Carolina. Now, he don't even know I know he interviewed for Western Carolina, but I know for a fact, unequivocally, he was the best interview at Western Carolina, but he didn't get the job. You know what I mean? And so, you know, and I'm happy Justin Gray got it. He's one of my young Thundercats. I raise and talk to him all the time. He's going to do a great job. But I just want everybody on the call to know that the network piece may be even more important than you being prepared. I want to make sure y'all know that. Listen.
Yeah, you got to know.
I'm saying,
you got to know the search firm guys.
Yeah.
No. You got to get to know those dudes. For better or worse, I'm not a search firm guy fan, but the bottom line is they can get you in the door. And they can't help you or crush you. So you better get to know those guys like Dez was talking about. Know the ADs. To me, like, write down 10 jobs. That, yeah, you might. Obviously, you don't want to cut the legs off anybody that's already got a job. We know that. Like, that's not the way to do it. But it's also about networking, like Dez said. And it helps get in the door. And then they know you. Then they know you rather than meeting you for the first time.
So, Goodman, let's talk about the narrative. I'm having a conversation with a major search firm guy. Major. I've known him for a while. Not going to call his name. He says to me, hey, CY, you guys at Florida State, y'all do a great job. Jalen Hamilton, he's the real deal. But y'all have all that talent down there, and y'all underachieve every year. So I said, huh? I said, excuse me. I'm at Florida State.
I want to know who this was. I want to know what Knucklehead said.
I can't do it. I can't do it. But trust me. So I'm having this conversation. I had to clean the narrative up. I said, do you know that we get a McDonald's All-American every other year. Carolina, Duke, Kansas, Kentucky, they get them every year. The talent that you see, that you're so impressed with, they're 2- and 3-star guys that we developed. So how are we underachieving? But we're taking the diamonds in the rough and making them better. Shouldn't you be commended for evaluating, developing? I mean, that makes you a great coach, but that's the narrative that was being put out there. That's absolutely ridiculous. So now Dennis Gates, myself, Stan Jones, we're fighting to get jobs because some guy doesn't know what he's talking about. You understand? So that's why I keep telling you guys, it's very important to understand the narrative, control the narrative, because the narrative is, if they don't get it right, it can crush you.
Well, again, listen, I would say part of that too is reaching out to people in the media. You know, we're all accessible. If we get it wrong, if I screw up, call me out. I got no problem saying I was wrong. Zero. I'm wrong plenty. Doster knows that better than anybody. But again, we're accessible. So the more we talk to you guys, the more we find out. Yeah. Stan Jones, he's not just a guy who can drop a play. He can actually recruit a little bit too, right? CY tells me that all the time.
He went and got Boston Coprovisa, bing, bang, boom. And nobody wants to give him credit for that. But listen, everybody's shocked that Dennis Gates is a monster at Cleveland State. I worked right here in this office with that young Thundercat. That boy was the truth when he was here. Drawing up plays, putting in offenses.
See why? What I will tell you is I've had plenty of head coaches in the past tell me a guy is really good so he can get him the hell out of there too. So, like, there are some dudes, and I'm not going to call out names, but I know it. I know it, okay? I've had it, and I don't fall for that shit anymore. I know at this point.
Hey, Goodman, stop using profanity on our good family.
All right, I'm sorry. We'll bleep it. Oster will bleep it out. He'll bleep it out.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right. Listen, we're going to wrap. We're at about an hour in 15, hour and 20 now. I know. Listen, I appreciate everybody doing this. I know CY does too. Dez, great for coming on and kind of telling your story and why you took ETSU. I know it took you about, 10 minutes to convince me when I called you up and was shocked and fearful a little bit of you taking it. Appreciate all you guys coming on. This was great. We're going to rotate guys in throughout the year. So hopefully we're going to do this hopefully every week. I mean, if CY goes on vacation, I don't know. We might have to take a week off if he hits a Waffle House and doesn't come back. But we're going to try to do it every week. So we'll have you guys back. And the best part, Doster didn't say a word. So it was phenomenal.